Well, the first thing I'd like to talk about, everybody, is an idea, and you may have heard it. I wrote a little bit about it, and I've talked about it a bit. It's called project-based leadership training. But it's not it's a multifaceted idea because the concept is based on this saying. It's out of the dojo and into the world. That the real mark of a teacher, you know, when we were first coming up, the first mark was, you know, okay, I got a lot of trophies, I must be good. Then our students got a lot of trophies. Then our school was huge. And then we had a great gross income, and we had trophies in the window, and this was all an indication of some kind of skill as a teacher. Well, the new mark of a master teacher is not what happens in their school. It's what happens out of the school. It's how you apply, your students apply their martial arts to their life. And so to measure this, or to get this happening in an experiential way with your students where they get to learn this idea through experience, not through just through lecture, project-based leadership training is the concept that at every belt level, give or take some age groups, you know, whatever the instructor prefers, how do they like to do it, the student engages in a project of their own choosing as a part of their belt test. So if Johnny is crazy about astronomy and Sally loves marine biology, they can pick some small project that's you know, manageable, and you'll be part of that, the village that helps them to define their projects, gather resources, initiate them, and record them. And those projects become a part of their belt test. So now the kid's out doing something. He's applying the courtesy and the focus and the concentration that you practice so diligently on the mat. He's doing good PR for the school because he's kind of been sent out there on a mission by you. And he's engaging other people. He's practicing leadership. He's learning experientially. So your leadership program comes out of the school. It's not about teaching other people necessarily. It's about doing things that require you to act on leadership. You know, success or fail, that's how you learn. And then what you get is you get all these interesting things brought over your tables because what we do is so redundant. And at the same time, you get a chance to have your students do something with their martial arts that's interesting to them, because we always dictate to them, you know, do this, move this foot, move back, step here. And we don't often give them free choice. I have a student who, two brothers, one was a gifted athlete, the other one was, you know, major nerd. Well, the major nerd turned out to have an IQ higher than Einstein's and is now a physicist. And the other brother, the athletic one, runs a school in Portland. Had I not found a way to get this, or could have, if back then I could have found a way to get this kid's interests involved in his martial arts, because he never excelled physically. We managed to keep him in the program for an extended period of time, but, you know, they're kids that are gifted in certain ways, and my job is not to teach them martial arts. My job is to teach them how to apply martial arts in their life. So project-based leadership training is where you implement this idea that we're going to engage in projects, and you're going to do projects yourself, and they can be very, very simple. Like doing 10 acts of kindness for a young child might be a project, but they engage other people, they learn something through it, they have a story to tell, and they come to their test, and they're doing their curriculum and this and that, and when all the parents are sitting around, you say, okay, Johnny, tell us about your project. Well, I had a friend who had cancer, you know, and so who knows what it is? But this is the idea of taking it out of the dojo and into the world. And what you'll do is you'll keep your projects in a project portfolio, which is typically used to be on our walls of the school, but now it should be kept online, and that could be video and audio. And video and written material, but anytime you get a good project, like we had one guy in Jason Gould in Boston who had a student who folded cranes every year for Hiroshima, and there's a legend about that. You know, the girl who had to fold 1,000 cranes hoping a wish would be granted, and now it's a custom. And he went around teaching kids for his brown belt project how to fold these cranes. Well, they sent like 10,000 cranes to Hiroshima, which was, you know, got the news and was good press, and so this guy's out talking martial arts, teaching art. I just love the juxtaposition of those subjects and something we may not have touched on before. And there are all kinds of interesting projects being done out there. But it's our ability to organize those projects, document them, and then blow our horn in a big way. It's very interesting. I'd like to, Kathy, if anybody has a question, we could open up a Q&A.
All right. Let me go ahead and do that. Okay. The lines are open if anybody would like to begin asking questions.
There's no way to have a candle this thing without this.
Someone's in the background going, I'll take a double espresso and with a Anybody have any questions about project-based leadership that you want to ask before I spew on with my next part of my lecture? I love it when you guys are engaged like that. All right, good. Well, they must be just notepads going furiously. Kathy, let's move on to the next subject.
Sounds great.
Guys, by the way, project-based leadership training, you know, might pass right over your head, but it is the most fundamental part of a new philosophy for teaching them martial arts, and that is that we engage in the community. Community activism is the new paradigm for martial arts school promotion. Forget lead boxes and all those things. They're all part of it. But the real thing is when you go out and touch people viscerally, when you do things that people just don't do, when they're dynamic, when they're engaged, when they're in the real world, it comes back and touches people emotionally, and that's the best kind of advertising. That's when you say, listen, Ms. Johnson, what I do for a living looks like it's kicking and punching, but let me show you our project portfolio. This is what I really do. And that these are things that kids are going to put in their resume someday, you know, as they go off into the work world. Well, I organized this, I did that, this is my project, and it's just brilliant. And then in the future, 20, 30, maybe even 40% of your curriculum that you require for testing will not take place in your school. It'll be things that are done on the outside of the school. And it would imagine if your curriculum itself, because typically curriculum is, you know, form number 1 through 4 and number 1 steps number 1 through 3, self-defense moves 5 through 7. Imagine if your curriculum actually promoted your school, that what was required for testing served a double purpose and actually brought attention to the school, brought the kind of attention you want, that you're a serious part of the village of educators that guide and mentor young people, people of all ages, in their lives. It's out of the dojo and into the world. It's also a great saying I picked up from the Aikido teacher Gaku Homa, who was Ueshiba, one of the last live-in students. He said, my dojo is my life. You know, I learn from my life. My dojo isn't just the four corners with the mats, you know, it's my life. So I love that. That saying. Anger Coach Online. Now, I was talking to a friend of mine. He's a preeminent anger coach in the world. The website is Anger Coach Online. Anger management is only taught in communities primarily, and I'm sure there's some exceptions, but I'd say 99% of the time it's taught to offenders. It's taught to people who already have problems with anger. So you take them to a group or they go to a psychologist. Well, that's not self-defense. You don't wait to get angry and have a problem and then go look to serve it. You do things before the fact. And so I talked to my friend, Dr. Tony Fiore, who's one of the preeminent anger management coaches in the world, and said, Andy, let's use martial arts schools as the preventive anger management program. Let's teach these folks exactly what they have to do, what's the, you know, current technology, what's the process, because they could be delivering it right alongside their sidekicks and front kicks, you know, over an extended period of time, and that kid could walk out of the school with a toolbox of strikes and punches and anger management. It's right up our alley. We should own that. And so he has a 10-hour online training course that you can take from anywhere, anytime. You could put your staff through it, whatever, and you could, and then he's going to have another class after that where you can be registered as a anger management educator. It's a new title. He made it up just for us. But he loves the idea of a million karate kids learning anger management preventively and to preempt the needs to take it down the road. And so I think that there's a school tour there. I love doing things in your school that nobody else is doing. They're not doing it in soccer. They're not doing it in football. They're not even doing it in school. Nobody's teaching anger management, and yet it's the essence, the core of self-defense. And how many conflicts would be avoided if this person internalized more self-discipline and had some new tools in their toolbox. I urge listeners to go to Anger Coach Online and at least investigate the idea, because I think that it's brilliant in its need in our society. It's so our stuff, but we never had any formal training in it. So you find the best guy in the world. He happens to have a program. Voila. And so I don't think anybody could execute it as well as we could. You know, it's right there with what we do. It's always been in the periphery of the martial arts, but I didn't know quite how to go step one, step. I could teach a form in steps, but I couldn't teach anger management until now. So I urge you to get there. Would anybody like to comment on that? Shall we open it up, Kathy?
Mr. Carlos, good morning. It's Dwight Woods in Miami.
Dwight, how you doing, brother? I recognize that voice from 1,000 miles away.
Well, it's interesting you should mention 1,000 miles away. I warmed up this morning for your teleconference by talking to a friend of mine in Australia who, and we were talking about sales, and he actually has a program which runs counter to the established way of approaching sales. And I was mentioning to him that I'm going to be on the phone later on today with a martial artist whose approach is running counter to everything that we've been doing for such a long time.
Interesting. But, so did he, is he a martial arts guy?
No, he isn't. Not at all.
Oh, cool.
No.
Well, do you feel like my work's counter to what we're really doing, or is it just a step to the right to find a new angle of opening, you know?
Yeah, well, yeah, not counter in terms of diametrically opposed, but it is definitely approaching martial art from a very different angle.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been using this saying out of the dojo and into the world, and it occurred to me the other day that we have to take the world and bring it back into the dojo. In other words, we can't cloister, or not, that's not the right word, we can't get locked in our schools and forget that we need to apply what we learn to the real world. And what really kills people today, what's really harming us, isn't attacks by bandits on the way to the market. It's attitudinal, it's dietary, it's anger management, it's things like that. So it just makes sense to me that if I'm teaching these things, I'm working so hard to teach people that I ought to teach them something they can really use that's relevant to what's going on in the world today. So I don't see any other way to go about it. How can we continue to do what we do if we're going to make ourselves irrelevant, or we're going to become a historical sidebar, you know, a novelty that, like the guys who go out and do the Civil War reenactments, you know? We've got to become more relevant to what's happening in the world today. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree perfectly. And I think the way I see what you're doing is microcosmic and macrocosmic. You know, on an individual level, on a personal level, we're doing something at our martial arts schools, but then the impact, the cumulative effect is macrocosmic, because it's all of us doing something different. But
yeah.
But if if we turn on TV, I don't know when the next UFC fight is going to be, that's what's getting all the media attention.
Yeah.
You know, and so sometimes my fear, to be honest, my fear for you is that there are people out there thinking, well, he's completely lost it. He's not talking about fighting anymore.
Yeah, but I have completely lost it, Dwight. You know that.
No,
you know, I had a revelation about fighting the other day, and that's because I hadn't watched the UFC show until my student, BJ Penn, hosted it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wanted to see what BJ was doing. So, and I was shocked at how, you know, crass the kids were. And, you know, they were just kids. You know, I had to mark it off as youth. And then of course, I'm immensely opposed to the war and the waste of money and life and resources. And it occurred, but somehow the two were connected. And then it occurred to me that fighting the ring and the UFC and the octagon and all that venue is the only place fighting should manifest itself. It belongs in the ring. It's the perfect place. Two consenting adults with a referee for a finite amount of time and space. That's what fighting should be. It shouldn't be happening in the streets with children's, you know, eye sockets being blown out by repercussive bombs and crazy stuff like that. So I'm more open-minded to the UFC. I see the logic in it. I mean, I think that's where fighting belongs. Under those conditions, it's ideal. Nobody innocent is hurt. So I have a new appreciation for it. Did I get hung up on?
I'd like to. Wait, was that you? Were you going to go ahead?
Oh, no. I'm just listening.
Okay.
Anybody else have anything they want to say? And I'm sorry, Kathy, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
Well, that's okay. I had something I did want to say. I really love the idea of teaching anger management in the martial arts school, not so much for the kids that, you know, may be more prone to the issues, but for all the other kids to learn how to deal with someone who does have anger and to kind of learn how to help that person rather than misunderstand that person. So I'm thinking of my 10-year-old daughter right now that is about to go to middle school next year and all the wonderful people she'll be exposed to, and just how much that would help her, you know, having to be able to, being able to understand where it's coming from a little bit, that it's not personal, and how to help that person diffuse some of their anger, I think,
an extremely great gift we can give our kids.
Absolutely. And, you know, the new paradigm, too, guys, when you – I'm thinking when I teach my instructor something, they teach the students, and my next step is to get the students to teach others. So, for example, right now I'm working with a group called DefeatDiabetes.org. Now, DefeatDiabetes.org is headed by a guy named Andy Mandel. Andy is on the last 1,400 miles of a 10,000-mile walk around the perimeter of the United States for diabetes. He's a member of the Ultimate Black Belt Test. That's not a part of his Ultimate Black Belt Test. He engaged in the Ultimate Black Belt Test in the last couple months, and he was already, you know, thousands of miles into his walk. We started talking about, well, he told me 1 in 3 children will be affected by diabetes in the next decade. And I knew that there wasn't hardly a school in the United States, unless the owner had diabetes or they'd had to address it, you know, face-to-face, that they were talking about it in the classroom. We weren't arming children that. I was teaching them 1,000 ways to block a middle punch, and I had never taught them about something that's probably going to take 1 in 3 of them out, or at least decrease the quality of their life. So I thought, well, we could, you know, in a 5 minute, you know, put your foot in the water kind of thing, kind of start to educate kids about diabetes, maybe how to avoid it. A lot of it is avoidable. And I thought, well, the ultimate tool would then be a 10 or 15 or a couple-hour training course for instructors so they understood what diabetes 1 and 2 was and all that. Then a 5-minute video we could either send to our students on our website or an email, or they could watch it in the classroom, whatever, and maybe some flashcards. And then what if we could get the kids to, as a requirement for One Belt, to go out and teach a 5-minute presentation that we designed for them through video and flashcards. Now, how much would that spread the information? Instead of them going and saying, hey, everybody, here's a guest pass for my karate school, they go out and teach something that's perfectly relevant, and the instructors, you know, and the teacher knows, the school administrator knows, the instructor, the karate school put them up to this, and they're out disseminating information that's useful. And they get a little bit better grade on their report card or a bonus grade or something. But we could make it so easy. Boy Scout troops, churches, all that kind of stuff. It's mobilizing the students, again, outside of the dojo and into the world. But they're out there advertising in a way that is good for the school, good for them, and good for the world, which is what Junri told me so many years ago everything had to be. Okay, anybody want to say anything before I spew on? And Kathy, how much time do we have?
You have as much time as you would like.
Oh, my God.
And up to half an hour. And we do have Mark McCumbers made a few comments on the web for you.
Yes.
After the 23 degrees in Illinois, he said that basically the anger management, he thinks it's a great idea. He's been on the website that you mentioned, and he said he thinks it looks great. And he's just also agreeing with you that he feels it's exactly right what you said about UFC, you know, fighting vs. the real world. You know, and what we really want martial arts to be. So he's there with you.
Yep, I'm glad to hear that, and Mark's a good friend. I'd like to go on to subject number next. Are we ready?
Sure.
Okay. I think the best thing you could do for your business, now you guys, those of you who know me know that I ran 2 of the largest schools at their time in the United States. I helped Mr. Reyes run many schools of his. You know, I was heavily involved there. That I've been teaching in the industry for a long time. I know all the top guys. I know business very well. And so, you know, I've been digesting it just like you all have. And one day it occurred to me that the essence, the smallest common denominator for whether a school was truly successful, and I don't mean just financially successful. I mean that it's fed the soul of the owner. It fed the soul of the students. It fed the soul of the staff. It wasn't just a money-making machine, because that's just one small, finite part of success. It was the instructor. When the instructor had his or herself together, mentally, physically, emotionally, socially, spiritually, the better the instructor was, the better the school was. Whether it was, you know, in a peak of financial gain or, you know, struggling through something, it was really the instructor or the instructors that led that. So I started the Ultimate Black Belt Test to get people to work on themselves in a way that just wasn't training, but that was had to do with empathy, had to do with kindness, had to do with spirituality, had to do with whatever it was, because in the future, your tests will be customized for each individual. Every single person is different. Everybody has different interests. If we want to knock this 99.9% dropout rate we have from white to black belt, we have to try some new things. And getting people to integrate their personal lives into their tests, so when they're working on their black belt, they're also working on those things that are most meaningful to them. That's what we need to do. And so we at least need to give it a good decade of try, you know. would if Johnny's most if John's most passionate interest is his family, can we work family goals into his training? Can he, over a long period of time, methodically work at strengthening his family bond, at doing things that are important to him, and can we have him add that to his test and say, I'm going to test for my black belt, and this is one of the things that I'm going to do. And then we help hold him accountable. Now when John comes out, and the ultimate black belt test is when the guy comes out and tells a story that knocks you off your seat. And that's what we want, isn't it? We want to start with the end in mind. We want to have somebody come out and say, I've taken the bar, got my degree from Harvard, I did this and that, but this experience is the most powerful, empowering experience of my life. We start, you got to start with that in mind. That's what I want. We don't always achieve it, but that's what I'm set out to do. So we start way in advance, like a lot of you do, but you don't look at the black belt. I don't delay getting good for 3 months from now. I'm not going to wait for my black belt test a year from now. Tomorrow's my black belt test. I'm not waiting for my vacation. I'm not waiting for the kids to get out of school. I'm not waiting for Friday. I'm going to start living tomorrow. Why not right now? So that's the kind of thing that you want to embrace in black belt testing. How would you act if today was your black belt test? How would you eat? How would you think? How would you engage with your seniors, your juniors? That's what I want more of that thinking, and then extend that. You want to make real habitual changes in people's behavior? Don't do what you and I did when we went to college, like, you know, party all week and then cram on Friday night. Your retention goes down to nothing after the test. I want to create long-term, habitual, positive behaviors in people's lives, so you start way out and you work on it methodically. And the genius of making a long test like the ultimate is that you can go to a kid and say, look how little things add up. 52,000 push-ups, 150 a day, it's no big deal. 1,000 acts of kindness, 3 little acts of kindness a day. The power of what you're teaching them is not anything other than whatever you want in your life. If you integrate it into your life in a small, you know, tiny little bite way, it adds up to be something. Even simple compounded interest over a lifetime is a frickin' fortune. So I want you to look at the ultimate black belt test. This isn't a sales call. This is a way for you to look at a new way that you might try testing in your own school. And I predict that you will have a program just like it in your school someday. And it's that our industry is moving more towards life coaching at some level. And this is more about life coaching and quantifying repetitions. So you want to, like I started a website called actsofmarketing.com, right? It's free. And actsofmarketing.com was a solution to a problem I was having with clients I was consulting because they weren't doing enough advertising. So I wanted to quantify, well, how much are you doing? So they can go on there and actually record how much. If you did 10 acts a day in a working month, you'd have about 200 acts of marketing. That's more than most people do in 6 months, some in a year. And that's one of the things about the ultimate black belt test. But also, you know, the black belt test has to mean more than it means now. We have to find a way to get deeper, to make long-term change, to make martial arts a part of these students' lives and not just something they temporarily do. So it has to be more than kicking and punching. And I think you all agree with that. I mean, there isn't a martial arts I've talked to that wouldn't like their martial arts to mean more and be more. And so, but how do we turn that into action? Well, the ultimate black belt test is all about action. It's like, you get up tomorrow, you knock out your push-ups, you get in, you do your 3 rounds, you do this. You methodically work at these gigantic ideas. And you record it, which is the most important part of the test, is recording the journey. I've had almost 120 people go through the test. There are people who had never journaled a week in their life, much less a year. Now they have a whole, wouldn't you like to have your grandparents' year of their lives? I'd like to know what my grandfather did when he jumped ship from Greece, you know, in Canada and made his way out. He was a merchant marine. I don't have a word from him. But your journey, and being able to show your students this is how you test for a black belt. That experience and documenting it in film and in writing in the here and now with modern technology, that's a gift like Dwight was talking about. He talked to a guy in Australia today, and yesterday I had a call from a guy in New Zealand who likes the UBT, wants to do it, another one from South Africa. So we have an international, you know, when you, in your own town, you can't find anybody who'll do it with you, but if you go in internationally, you can find people just as whacked out as you are. Anybody want to mention or ask a question or anything about what I've just been talking about, please, let's open it up, Kath.
All right, we're open.
Who talks faster, me or Dave Kovar? I just want to know.
You do.
Okay. Yes. Anybody want to make any comments?
Tom, we did have a comment from Keith Gagnon from Connecticut online.
Yes.
And he was just saying he's a big fan of UBBT. In his school, he said that they constantly teach that their self-defense portion of their program doesn't mean that you have to come and learn to hurt someone. It's harder to control someone with a physical joint lock and de-escalate violence. So they, you know, they teach basically anger management, and
yeah.
And he believes that the confidence from those classes really help.
Well, you know, one of the things that most instructors don't have, and I'll give everybody a free resource. It's been on the Internet for a while. If you go to the 100.org, it's my martial arts association I started a year or so ago. It's there's some free resources under resources. Two of those resources are two sets of flashcards you can print on your computer and make yourself. And each one of them is the top 10 things that kill adult males, and the other one is adult females, and we ought to know what they are for kids, too. Now, you can be in a martial arts school for a year and never have those things addressed. The top 10 things that actually kill people. Here we are. We're supposed to own self-defense, and yet we're not even teaching anything to do or really addressing in a proactive way those things that kill people. I'm sure there are schools that are, but most instructors, I think they'd be hard-pressed to come up with what the 10 were. And so this set of flashcards kind of serves as a little reminder, and at least you're addressing it, you know. All of you have had students who died. I've had students who died from suicide, from drowning, from fires, from, you know, cancer and diabetes and everything over the years. And I remember this one kid, Sam. Sam killed himself in a car on purpose. With the hose and all that, and his father was crushed. They were both students. He was a teenager. And I'd had Sam in my school for a year and a half, 2 years, and I thought, man, you know, here I spent all that time teaching him how to block punches and kicks, and that's not what took him out. And I never forgot that, and anybody who's lost a student knows that feeling. We have to expand our curriculum, and that requires the master instructor, whoever's the head of the group, to get educated, to open their mind, to experiment and try new things. Then it has to immediately affect the next generation. And there's, you know, I can't remember who it was, but they said, you know, one of the best ways to learn new things is to teach them. And so that's right up our alley. And I think that there's a responsibility for martial artists. If we're going to be relevant, or if we're going to be important in today's society, which we have the potential, it's like they're holding the door open for us. We just haven't stepped through it in a big enough way. If we take a new slant on the way we provide our education and our purpose and the intent why we're here in the world, we are going to be vital, important beyond the UFC, vital, important beyond entertainment. We're going to be real educators, but we must address those things that really educate. And we know, we could all sit down and list the things that are hurting children, things that are sending them astray, young adults, adults, and then we just have to learn how to address those things tactfully in the time frame that we have in our classroom and start exercising that wisdom. And I think the first place to start is with ourselves, you know. Anybody want to comment on anything?
Mark has issued something online he wanted you to know. Mark McCumber says that he has 6,919 acts of kindness with about 500 to 700 to enter on the 911AOL.com site.
Yeah, we're going to redo that site soon. We're almost at 150,000. We'd probably be at 1,000,000 if we'd overcome a little technical issue. But, yeah, that was
wow.
The first website in the world to track individual acts of kindness. And that's, you know, it's hard to do something that's first in the world. So that was kind of cool. But I'd like to let everybody know that it's not my intention to make you feel like we're not doing the right work. I think a small shift of the wheel, the steering wheel to the right or left down the road puts you in a completely different place. And I think we're doing a lot of good work, and a lot of you are already along this path. And I just want to, you know, offer that small kick in the pants to say, I think we can do a lot better. It's the same thing you do to your students. You know, you hold them accountable to better performance. And I think that, you know, I'm just shocked that I can open a Black Belt magazine or any martial arts magazine and spirituality and, you know, it's hardly mentioned. You go to open a yoga magazine and every other article is about something of developing yourself as a whole, you know, in a holistic way. And I think we need a little balance there. Which brings me to my final topic. peace education. That means everything related to peace. Dialogue, internal dialogue, nonviolent conflict resolution, negotiation, whatever it is, anything that sits under the huge umbrella that is peace is our territory. We have to take that over. But a lot of people don't know where to start. And when I first started talking about peace among my peers, people started bringing up Hitler and World War II and all this kind of things. Just let me tell this. So I had the power gal outside looking to read the meter. So the place to start is with a monk named Thich Nhat Hanh. Thich Nhat Hanh wrote a book, Peace is Every Step. Now, a bunch of the UBBT guys went to visit Thich Nhat Hanh this last year, and this is like the guy, if you read my little article, this is the guy who would have been the real monk in Kung Fu. You know, he's a wise person. You know, Martin Luther King nominated him for a Nobel Peace Prize in 1967. When you hear this guy talk, it gives you the verbiage. Like when I first heard Tony Robbins talk about motivation, I immediately, you know, took the verbiage and understood, hey, I can say these same things with as much conviction because they sing to me. You know, they ring true. That's what you'll hear when you hear Thich Nhat Hanh. Give you a great place to start talking about peace. The only reason we should be teaching peace is because it's the other side of the yin-yang, right? We know violence so well. There isn't a technique or an angle or a part of your body you don't know how to strike or strike with. Yet we're not balanced in the way we talk about peace. I know 20 ways to disarm someone by force in about any position, but I can't offer an equal and opposite to that, non-force. And I think that we need to own that. And right now there's nobody, you know, there's no draft. So you don't have a young, up-and-coming university people protesting the war, you know. We martial artists should be talking. I don't care about violence. We can talk about it. We can teach elbow strikes and knees. I want to balance so that when a student leaves my school, they know just as much about how to kick and punch as they do know about peace and nonviolence. And that seems to me to be a natural path. And if we're looking for ways to engage the media, to engage educators, to hit the sweet spot of what parents are concerned about in the world, we could start talking peace in a much more effective way than we do now. And the way we talk about peace now is, you know, the karate tournaments of the 60s, and we need to get up to speed and be able to be the UFC, you know, this fighting machine, this finely tuned, you know, these guys get out and they are in top shape and they know the top and the bottom. I mean, we ought to be able to do the same thing, but in regards to any endeavor that's related to the martial arts, and peace is one of the most important things. I just produced a set of 12 flashcards for peace. If you go to that, there, it's the best way to start talking about peace. You take a famous person, like here's one by a guy named Mikhail Name. He says, the flashcard says, I fight, but not your neighbor. Fight rather all the things that cause you and your neighbor to fight. And so you bring this little flashcard up, you have Johnny read it, and then you discuss it for 45 seconds, you know. It's a great way to stick your little toe in the water of discussing, bringing peace into the classroom in a way that's that a 17-year-old could do, that isn't invasive, that it doesn't address, you know, whether war should exist or not. It's just simply, let's make sure we're talking about it when we teach. Anybody want to add anything? That's your cue, Kath.
Already taken care of.
Mr. Kath.
Yes, sir.
This is Bruce Costa with Tsunami Karate in Perkasie, Pennsylvania. My partner Barbara and I had the pleasure of chatting with you after your seminar 2 Las Vegases ago. We sat in an informal circle, and you expressed a lot of the thoughts that you've expressed today. And I got to tell you something. I think you are sending out the most important message in our community today. And I just can't thank you enough for the time that I've spent stewing over that hour and a half I was with you total with the seminar and the afterward. And I also had the pleasure of going to that Thich Nhat Hanh retreat in Massachusetts for a week, and it was just the most powerful thing I've ever done. So you're right on track, and I'm trying to do something. I'm having a problem with it, and I love your thoughts. I operate a long-range goal-setting program in my school. We offer testing, BELT exams, 3 times a year, right? So that leaves a 4-month period in between. And everybody in my school is expected to do a long-range goal during that 4-month period. And the only thing it can't be is karate-related. So, you know, we've had academic achievements, we've had languages learned, instruments played, and the number of philanthropic efforts that have come out of this thing over the 6 years we've been in business have really been numerous, and we're real proud of it, and it really does great. Here's my problem, is that, you know, I print out a sheet specifically for every student of the school, and after the BELT promotion, and it's a competition, incidentally, so you can, I have metrics by which I measure how challenging the goal is for the individual relative to kind of where they're at in life. So I can have adults and children compete on the same scale. And we have a gold, silver, and bronze medal and certificates for everybody that participates regardless of their level of achievement. And, yeah, I mean, I obviously I've thought this thing through to death. And I'll tell you what, every time we do the ceremony, I have an individual sheet printed out for everybody to fill out, a deadline for them to hand that in. By the time that deadline comes, a third of my students, tops, have handed the thing in. And by the time then the goal deadline itself comes around, which is, you know, a week prior to the BELT exam, and then I can give the award along with the BELT promotion ceremony, by the time the deadline comes around, I have anywhere between 3 and 6 people that have finished the thing at all. Yes. So, it's
messy. So that's your problem.
Yeah. So what am I doing wrong?
No problem. That's an opportunity to make it easier. You got to, you know, I'm 48 years old. Turned 48 last Saturday or Sunday, and I'm just now getting to do a couple things my dad was trying to teach me when I was 10. And so I think that you're doing the right thing. You're nurturing along. You're spending as much energy and time as maybe I used to spend trying to get my kids to go to the Junior Olympics. You know, I love that the area you're working in, learning how to do that. You're just making it too complex. If you're having that big of a dropout rate, just relook at what you're doing, make the projects more simple. If when I did the UBBT, I just thought to myself, there are 28 basic tasks in it, and I thought, man, if I could get anybody to do just one of these things, you know, if someone would just start meditation 15 minutes a day for a whole year, or if they would just do the acts of kindness, it's going to be a transformation in their life. If I get them all to do all 28 things, it'll be a miracle. The UBBT is almost impossible to do, and that's like Everest, right? Most people don't make it, you know, unless you're, you know, a doctor and a lot of money. But the point is that you might just relook at what you're doing, and you made a great first effort. You've had some real successes, and what you're unhappy about is that you're not having enough success rate. So it's time to go back to the drawing board. The intention is right, the ambition is right. It's just you're just going to have to look at what you're doing and maybe break it down to smaller bite-sized steps. If you worked with a student two or three times a week in 45-minute segments for 2 or 3 years, and you got them to make one major goal in their life outside of the martial arts, you would be setting a record, because I don't think most instructors are even thinking about that. Mm-hmm. So I like the ambition of your project. It's like the UBBT. It's over the top. Mm-hmm. And so look at it again. I'm not saying you're not doing exactly the right thing, but, you know, chances are you could relook at it, redesign, and maybe if you want to talk about this some more, too, you can give me a call privately so we don't, you know, because I could go on and on.
All right.
But I like what you're doing.
Thank you.
Just got to tweak it.
That means a lot to me.
So, everybody, I hope you've gotten some good out of the call today. You know, I started the 100 and the UBT. Really was an inspiration from a lady who wrote me a 2-page letter once. Her name was Rosa Parks. I wrote her with a question, and she was kind enough to write back in great detail. She's a hero of mine. What I love about Rosa Parks is she was a diminutive 42-year-old African-American seamstress who was at the right place at the right time and took some definitive action in a place of injustice and helped to change history. She played a huge role in that. I always think to myself, what could 10, 20, 50, 100, 1,000 martial arts masters do? couldn't we not look at the right place in the right time and create it? Why, are you telling me that 10 of us, with all of our experience and our courage and our, you know, fortitude and all those things, could we not equal one 42-year-old American, African-American woman seamstress? I mean, we could, but we have to unite to do that, and we have to find a common goal. And peace education, nonviolent conflict resolution, health education, if you embrace the defeat diabetes, we're going to have a whole curriculum for martial arts schools. You would be one of the first martial arts schools in the world that addressed in a proactive way disease prevention, because I don't think it's a part of most schools right now. What about anger management? Why don't you be the first? You should own anger management in your town. Whenever anybody says anger management, they think of you, your face in anger management, or, you know, that's what they think. I mean, there's ways for us to make a difference, and these things, which are probably very good for our business, are also very good for the world. The last thing this planet needs is another frickin' kid who learns how to throw a punch to somebody's face, or a kick, or a grenade tossed, or a missile launched. The martial arts is the vehicle. We're getting in the vehicle, we're going somewhere. Where are we going? That's what we're headed. We have to shift our wheels a little bit, expand our thinking, and it should start with you, Mr. Master Instructor, Mrs. Master Instructor, first. Get yourself together. Fix everything that needs to be fixed about your thinking, about your teachers, about your habitual behaviors, and you start from there. And as you go through your transformation, your students will be inspired by what you're doing with yourself. So I'm now off the soapbox officially. Would anybody like to add anything before we say goodbye?
I just to say, like, wow, that was such a great motivational dose and a kick in the fanny for some of us.
Well, good. I hope it inspires some of you to take action, because without action, you know, like, if you're not going to do anything, we're just going to get all excited. Take action, take small action, do 10 things tomorrow, whatever it is. Come talk to me about the ultimate. Talk to me about the work I'm doing and become a part of this village of people who are taking back the martial arts from, you know, from entities that maybe didn't have the same focus. The best way to reach me is tomcallos@gmail.com. And on my cell phone at 530-903-0286. This commercial is brought to you by Tom Callos. thank you, Kathy. It's my honor to talk to the group. I feel we're all working on the same work, and, you know, I'm really honored to be a part of the group and to be a part of the martial arts world right now. It's a really exciting time.